October 2, 2020, it's a lot for Pedro show.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to have John Coltrane in front of our microphone here. And John, I gotta be abrupt with you. I gotta say like this, that your playing has been turned antenna-like, unbeautiful, on just about everything you can think of. And since the playing mirrors the personality, I guess you have some personal thoughts of that kind to say.
Let me follow you again. You said my playing has on what?
I didn't say that. I said what the critics said.
They seem to think that it's an angry sort of thing. It's real. Some of them do. I don't know about the critics here.
Do you feel angry?
No, I don't. I was talking to a fellow today, and I told him that the reason I play so many, it sounds angry because I'm trying so many things at one time, you see. Like, I haven't sorted them out. I have a whole bag of things that I'm trying to work through and get the one essential, you know.
Would you say that you're trying to play everything you hear one time or something like that?
No, there are some set things that I know, some devices that I know, harmonic devices that I know, that will take me out of the ordinary path, you see, if I use these. But I haven't played them enough, and I'm not familiar with them enough yet to take the one single line through them. So I play all of them, you know, trying to acclimate my ear so I can hear, you know.
In the album liners of your latest LP, that was the Giant Steps LP, which we have played quite a lot on this show, you claim that you were trying to get a more beautiful sound. Would you help me with that?
Well, I hope to play not necessarily a more beautiful sound, though I would like to, just say tone-wise, I would like to be able to produce a more beautiful sound. But now I'm primarily interested in trying to work what I have, what I know, down into a more lyrical line. You know, that's what I mean by beautiful, by more lyrical. So to be, you know, easily understood.
I'm sure our listeners are, as they are mainly collectors of Coltrane records, I'm sure they like to hear you express one thought of what you think is listenable among your whole production.
You mean of the albums that I made? I like Blue Train myself.
I figured you would.
There's such a good band on there, you know.
That's a real dangerous album, man.
It was a good recording.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this last quartet recording here, Giant Step?
I think that was my best quartet recording so far. With the exception of maybe Soul Train, I'd put them both about the same.
How would you say working with Miles Davis has influenced you stylistically?
Well, it has led me into most of the things that I'm doing now. Yeah.
He has had a major stranglehold on you in that matter. I mean, he made you play the way you do, or you got a chance to play like
well,
you
I've
do.
Been free. I've been so free here, you know, that almost anything I want to try is, I'm welcome to do it, you know, so that's the freedom has helped me.
I heard you were splitting
experiment.
The Miles Quintet here and then trying something on your own.
Yes, I am.
How's that? With whom?
I have several men in mind, but I haven't selected the sidemen yet. Yeah. I'm going
what
to
do
try
you feel
with
like
the
working
quartet.
With a quartet?
Yeah, to begin with, and maybe in several weeks after I start, I might add a fifth man.
John, which tenor players do you think have influenced you, if any at all?
All of them. I would say all of them. But,
do you have a personal favorite, I mean, like you put on a record when you were at home and relaxing and so on?
Well, Sonny Rollins is, I think he's outstanding tenor man today, you know. And,
that is exactly what Sonny Rollins told me on this show about you. So
that's usually, you know, my man.
It seems to be a mutual
admiration
society here.
Yeah, well, he's great. I mean, you know. have.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the formative days, well, like years ago, it was Dexter Gordon that mm-hmm. actually was. I
mean, well, you do have a strong feeling for tradition, haven't you?
I guess so. I mean, I would like to even make it stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to strengthen my roots, so to say. Mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't start at the beginning, and there's a whole lot back there that's, you know, that all young musicians should have.
Privately, I mean, when you're listening, you go back there, I mean, just on your own account and listen?
Well, I don't have many records in that era now, but I do plan to get them. I plan to include that in my repertoire, you know, all these old traditional things. I've been trying recently to search myself, you know, and try to find things that are reminiscent that sound like those things. But I'm really going to do some work on that soon.
Well, John, it seems like you're on with the Miles Davis Quintet here, and thank you very much for taking the time and dropping in on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Enjoy it.
Show. Happy Friday, first Friday, October. Start off the show, John Coltrane doing an interview with Kari Eric Finger in 1960. And then we had BQM from Kariki, which brings me to my guest. Where are you calling from, Ian?
I'm right outside of Washington, D.C. I'm at Discord House in Arlington, Virginia.
Arlington, that's what I thought.
Yep.
So, God, and you, people, he has invested in a good microphone, so he doesn't have that bunk, lame-ass sound that you're usually used to of people making connects this way. Thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I should point out, by the way, that today's October 2nd, 2020, which means that yesterday, October 1st, is the 39th anniversary of when we moved into Discord House.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're a year off of 40 on this joint.
30, wow.
Now, I haven't lived here for. I moved out. I don't live here, but I work. I own the house, so I come out and work here. But Discord House continues. It's the same place that you bunked down many times.
That's right, and in fact, in the basement, which was your prac pad,
yep.
You let the Minuteman prac there.
Yep.
That tour with Black Flag, and we wrote Love Dance. D. Boone wrote Love Dance, and you had to people the way their cellar was. You had to stand between the beams,
right? The rafters. You had to literally had your head in the rafters.
Yeah, and so you didn't have a lot of eye contact.
Well, you also could sit down. That was our secret sauce. You sit down. That's how you get the. That's how, you know. I always thought that's like why. A lot of the band I was in, we were so interested in tight corners because we could sit down and really focus on it. You know, and also you couldn't be too loud down there.
Yeah.
You know, you're all, you know, it's too small a room. So we really were able to focus on precision and getting them really tight corners.
Yeah. And what else I remember is outside the pad, you guys had, I guess, had 12 packs of Cokes and Pepsis or whatever, strung up like Christmas tree things.
Yeah, we used to drink so much soda pop here that we had, we could buy those 12 packs of Coca-Cola, and then just to razz our new neighbors, we strung them like we had, like, we kind of put them on string and had them, like, arched on the porch. People were not psyched about that. Then, you know, I know that a year or so, maybe 2 or 3 years later, you know, Jeff Nelson, who lived here, and the drummer of Minor Threat and co-owner of Discord, he had worked at a pharmacy called Drug Fair, or drugstore kind of place. And in the basement, he found this massive collection of cardboard bunnies that were a part of some Easter display. Probably, you know, 400 of these cardboard bunnies that are maybe 2 feet tall. And we did it. We completely covered the entire front of the porch wall. Like when you come up, it was like pure bunnies from one side to the other. And I think the neighbors, we were new to the neighborhood. I think they were deeply disturbed by what was going on over here. It's funny. I lived in this house for 21 years. And with the exception of the next door neighbors, I really never got to know anybody else in the neighborhood. I knew the woman across the street who called the police on us regularly. Although we ended up being friends after a while. After she, you know, she, at some point she had a medical emergency and we helped save her. You know, we were involved to some degree with that. And then we became pals. And then I went to her funeral many years later. So, but really, I think this house, we were, you know, punk kids. Most of us had been out of high school for almost a year. And our parents just said, okay, go do what you're going to do. And we desperately needed a place. Well, first off, we needed like a fort, a meeting house, a clubhouse. We also needed a place to practice, which had to be detached, and we needed to be cheap because we were broke as hell. And it had to be relatively safe in terms of the neighborhood, not so much in our accord, but really because we knew that as soon as we established this base, that all of our friends were going to come see us. A lot of whom were much younger, even, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old punk kids. And we didn't want to have them having to navigate really, really sketchy neighborhoods. So it was we had a pretty clear, like, idea of the kind of house we were looking for. And, this is actually the first house we ever looked at. We just walked in the house. Some dudes were sitting there watching TV and I said, is this a nice house to live in? And the guy's like, I guess so. And I go, okay, I guess we'll take it. I don't know. Like, you know. The owner of the house came, they put down a lease for 1 year. And I crossed 1 year out and put 6 months. I thought there was no way I was going to stay here for more than 6 months. And I ended up living here for 21 years. And now I've had it for 39.
It shows to go, yeah.
Well, yep.
What about this Kariki proj? I mean, you wouldn't imagine that then either, right?
No, it's a band, not a proj, though. It's a straight band.
Oh, there's a diff. Okay.
There is. Yeah, I think there is. People often say project, and I think it's a diminutive sometimes.
Okay.
Not always.
Can I bring up an example? What about Egg Hunt?
Project.
Okay. Now I know what you mean.
Okay, project. That was a studio thing. Palehead, project.
Okay.
Fugazi? Band.
Okay.
Evens, band.
Okay.
Not a project.
No,
I think especially with the Evens, you know, because it was Amy and I were in the band together.
Sure.
And people say, are you doing a project with your girlfriend? And that's I think that's dismissive.
Okay.
The guy wasn't. I was doing a band with Amy Farina. And she's a badass. Right.
This is the tradition of Fugazi and Evens. It's not the tradition of Egg Hunt.
Right, like, that's my distinction. There's nothing wrong with a project. You know, I see you do all kinds of stuff. It's killer. I love it. It's just that when you talk about a band, don't call it a project. Not you, but one shouldn't call a band a project, you know, because there's a slight, for me at least, in my linguistic thing. There's a slight semantic. Or a semantic thing. It's a different meaning. But yeah. Anyway, this band, Kariki, you know, Amy and I did the Evens. We played for over a decade. And then after 2013, we played our last shows in 2013. And I really had this, I was struggling with the performances at the time because I really felt like people, I felt like I was playing recitals. And, you know, people would just come, we would play, they'd sit, we'd play, and then it would be over. And there was no, I felt there was nothing happening. And also, as a two-piece, it's a little bit, the conversation's a little tighter. You can't really wander as a musician because the other person is so dependent on your, like, it's a frame, like you're working together. And I think that it just started to feel, I struggled with it. I felt like the relationship with the music, I want shows to be, like, I have a pretty strong thing about what a show is. Like, you know, I always, if you ever see me play with the Event or the Kariki, I often will say, this is a show. I'll say to the audience, I said, the show is a joint effort between the performers and the audience. I said, if the audience was not here, we would be practicing. And if we were not here, you'd be having a weird Quaker meeting, right? Because it's actually what a show is something that happens between, it's the alchemy between the two elements, right? And I think with the Evens, though some of the shows were really great, a lot of them I really felt like people were just came to see and we couldn't connect on some other level. And so I thought I need to take a break from playing anyway, playing shows. But Amy and I never stopped playing. We continued to work on music. We played with this guy, Mark Cisneros. You know Mark.
Sure.
Yeah, Mark played with us for a number of years. But we were not being at that point. We were just playing. Like, that's something I've always made a distinction. Like, we're not forming a band. We're just playing music. And people would say, Mick, how come you've not been playing? I've been playing. I play 3-4 times a week. I'm practicing. And I'm playing guitar by myself.
Practicing.
I'm always playing. Like, yeah. I'm getting there. I don't, you know, I'm getting to where I need to be with my music. I'm just not doing it. I'm not playing shows. And which is different than music, you know.
Yeah,
and
practicing is the word I get uptight about when people say rehearse, man. That's,
oh, I know.
That's
even, I know. I love
than
that about
Prodge.
I still, sometimes I'll be saying, like, you know, I'm rehearsing with a band. I can feel you kicking me in the back of the head.
Well,
I love that about you.
I have yet to hear a basketball player say, I'm going to the gym and go rehearse some hoops.
Right, fair enough. But I mean, it's an interesting. But also, I think there's play rehearsal, right? And that's a different thing. Like theater, like you're rehearsing something. That
absolutely.
Means it's like you're scripting. You're working off a script.
Right, right. You're
right. And I guess when you're practicing if you're practicing, I guess in the term of using your sports analogy, like you're getting your chops. You know, you're
right,
getting ready.
Right.
So you don't know what's going to happen.
Actually, in Watt world, real prac is the gigs, but you can't be any good with that prac unless you have the other, you know. Secluded in the bunker prac.
I hear you. I'm with you on that. I understand that. I always think it's two different fronts in a way. Like, because I think the basement practice is really, that work is really intense and in deep.
Yeah.
And you know, you crawl way up the ass of a song.
Yeah.
You turn it inside out. Sometimes you destroy it.
Yeah.
You know, but then what happens is when you go into a stage, suddenly it's in your hands.
Yeah.
And it's already there, right? You already got it. And I think so then Amy and I played with Mark for a year and a half, which was great. And then Joe moved back to town.
That's right. From Italy.
Right. And that was 2015. And so I said, you know, we played with Joe before he went off to Italy just because, you know, I've known Joe forever and both Amy played with Joe and I obviously played with Joe. And so having Joe back in town, we started to play again. And we practiced regularly for years with no name, just played and played and played. And people kept saying, "Are you, you know, what's going on with your band?" I go, "We're just practicing. We're just playing music right now." But then when we decided to do a show, that's when we became a band. Like, all right, let's become a band. Let's do this. And we played our first shows in 2018. Not many. We're on a tight schedule. Joe was in Mystetic, so he was super, super busy. And obviously, I'm Discord has been busy, and Amy and I, you know, we have a now 12-year-old son. Wow. So there's a lot going on all the time. And obviously, we're not going to be able to do, we're not going to be able to do the serious, you know, as we call them, stem winders of tours, right? Like, we can't, we're going to have. Guys, we're not doing the big circle. Although I must say, I was thinking about you, and like, I don't know if you had anything on the boards this year, but it's interesting to think about, not going for you to not be playing is something weird in the world, you know.
I did take the 60 year off.
That's right. Oh yeah.
That was the first time since the D Boone Georgie days. I want to play here. Jack says.
We'll be right back. Honey, there is nothing I can give you. Nothing I can do for you today. There is nothing I can show you. And so you must accept some other way. You are weaving through the seasons. It's a walk among the thieves. You are dear to the assassin. And so that's how it has come to be. It took a while to know you, and even still it sometimes moves. There's something not quite settled, something less than true. Honey, there is nothing I can tell you. Not a word as we do part. So show me now you're leaving. Show me now your famous heart. Show me now your famous heart. Show me now your famous heart.
I brought this empty heart, these empty hands, this mind ignoring, this body homeless. These empty hands, this body homeless, this empty heart, to him I brought, this mind ignoring, this mind ignoring, to him I brought, this empty heart, this body homeless, these empty hands, this body homeless, this mind ignoring, these empty hands, this emptied heart.
Quickly detour. to Blu-rays. Roasting down and Trish the Bratton, dry his face, it's great, and get him out of the Blu-rays. He's finally delivering the paper. It's in the puzzle. Your trip blew me down. Now, baby, your trip blew me down. Now, baby, your trip blew me down. Now, baby, your trip blew me down. We'll be right back.
showed us to feel so bad. Beautiful is dirtier.
For Pedro Show, as Jack says, from Kariki. After that, Natalie Cruz, brand new Tiger, Will Johnson, you dear to the assassin, and Austin there, the friend of Thor, Silver Apples, the late great Simone, thank you so much for being ahead of your time, in your time, brother Simone, Sea Green Serenades, Deerhoof, brand new thing where they put together all kinds of other people's songs into their own style. Love Lord, number one. I think there's five or six of them. Bombas Prendon. You know about this band? It's a DC band from early 80s that never did gigs, only record. I guess it was a proj.
What was it called?
Bombas Prendon.
No, I don't know it.
Yeah, I found out, you know, DangerousMinds.net? Great site, and they had a big story on them, and I've been playing them.
Sorry about the ringing there.
That's real life. Don't worry.
That's real life.
Lanzayama's duo with Plastic Island out of España. Yeah. Guided by Voices, Bob Pollard. He's got another album coming out.
Wow.
Out of the Blue Race. Yeah, this guy, right? What, three albums this year already?
It's impressive.
The Ridiculous Trio. This is guys doing Stooges with trombone and tuba and drums.
That's nice.
Not right.
But it isn't. Wait, you're not talking about Little Stooges Brass Band. You're talking about a brass band that's doing Stooges songs?
It's a power trio, just sax, a trombone, tuba, and drums.
Are you familiar with Little Stooges Brass Band?
No, I'm not. But that's a great idea.
Oh, I'm just not I used to go to the New Orleans Jazz Fest every year in the late 90s, and I would go down to the record store down there and look through the brass, their like local brass band stuff, just because I see such a parallel with the go-go scene here. And there was a band called Little Stooges Brass Band, and I bought that CD, and it's just so banging. It's such a great piece of work, and it's so, I mean, if you bought a go-go record here, they were all CDs at the time, but you bought a go-go CD. Like, the artwork was the same, very similar kind of designs, and, like, all the guys in the front, and then they have, like, they start the thing out with, like, the shout-outs and all that, and it's so, the parallel of it was so fascinating to me, and I always just love the fact that there was a band called Little Stooges, you know, brass band, and I often wonder if they had any idea if there was a band, they knew who the Stooges were.
So they weren't doing Stooges material. See, these guys, they cover Stooges.
Yeah, yeah. Did I ever tell you my Stooges story? This is funny. I think I must have told you this story. That when Black Flag first came to Washington in early 1981, they stayed at my mom's house, right? My parents' house. They stayed on the floor with us, and they spent a couple of days in town, and we had a great time with them, just hanging. Me, of course, Henry, that's when we all met them, really, and got to spend all that time with them. And then finally, the day, you know, they're leaving, and we were out by that, I think they had like a red van, and
Billy's dad's Chevy van.
Right, so they were loading up, you know, getting everything loaded up, and that sort of sad moment when you know they're pressing on, you're not, you know, and you just wish you could get in the van with them. And I said, so like, what do you guys listen to? You know, like just trying to, not, I'd never toured, keep in mind, like I didn't ever did, but I had done some long drives, and I know did a lot of time with the juke. And so I said, what do you guys listen to? And Dukowski said, a lot of Sabbath, a lot of Stooges. And I thought, huh. And then I thought to myself, I think I've heard of Black Sabbath. I think that guy, Ozzy, like I think that I've heard of Black Sabbath. And I go, But I had no idea. I thought he had like audio recordings of the Three Stooges. I had no clue what he meant by the Stooges at all. Period. And I thought, that's really weird. Like, why aren't they listening to Sham 69 like the rest of us? You know?
Okay, here's an old band, television with Richard Hell doing Judy.
Oh, man, do Little Johnny Jewel. That's the jam.
Right. Well, I played that a few times. This is very live, rare live, 1974, Max's Kansas City. So,
all right, well, let's do it.
Judy never made it to an album, so it's a tribute.
All right, I'll check it out.
And then Say Yes from Kariki. So tell us about the name, Kariki.
So we, you know, as a band, like, you know, Amy and I were into Evens forever, and then we thought, obviously, we'll call them, if we get Joe to it, we'll just call the band The Odds. That was the idea. I mean, this seemed like an obvious thing to do, and it would just be clean and simple. But I just thought, I guess I should look, do a little due diligence, and see if somebody's got a copyright on that name. I just don't want to get into any of that. Just not interested. So I looked up, you know, for other bands called Odds or The Odds, and I found a band. I think they're from Canada, actually, and they had I just read about them, and it said that they had been a band, and then they broke up, and then some of them put out another record using the same name, and then the bulk, I guess, I don't know, they made the original guy, I don't know, the other half put out another record called The New Odds, but then it said something like, after resecuring the name, they put out another record as Odds, or the, and I thought, the word resecuring the name, I smell lawyer on that, you know? And so I really, I mean, it's interesting. Like, my name is Ian, and your name is Mike. And you know how many Ians and Mikes there are in the world? There are a lot, right? And we seem to be able to get by. But when it comes to this, with music, there's this really deeply disturbing and twisted sort of proprietary business component to it. And though I don't think that I'm not particularly worried about having two bands called The Odds, I think if people who are feeling proprietary or protective of their mark or whatever, if they saw that I was using it, they would probably come after me. And I thought, well, it's just not even worth dealing with. So then we started trying to think of other names. And Brendan Canty, drummer of Fugazi and drummer of Mystetics and dear, dear friend, he said, you guys should call yourself Kariki. and we all laughed because Kariki is this liar's dice game that Fugazi learned from this British band in 1989 or 90, this band Thatcher on Acid. And we were backstage at the show and they were sitting around a table slamming a cup down and screaming at each other. And I said, what are you doing? They said, we're playing Kariki. And I said, well, God, I want in on that. So I sat down and learned the game. And then Fugazi, the rest of Fugazi's guys learned it. And then we just obsessively played it. Came back to D.C., played it with everybody here. Amy played it all the time. We taught it to Albini. He taught it to the entire world. you know, and it just became this underground game. And the point.
Except Watt don't know it. Watt don't know it.
Well, Watt was. I'm surprised that Albini didn't make you play it. But the hook of it all is that in that game, like the winning role, no matter what, like the supreme role is three, a two and a one. And Brendan just said, you just call yourselves Kariki. And at first we sort of were like, that's a cool idea, but we don't really want to have to explain that it came from a dice game. But then by the time we ended up started playing, I think our first show we were called maybe we were just called Band. I don't even remember what we were called. We had
Ian,
no name.
I got to cut you off. We're at the end of the first hour, October 2, 2020. Special
what happened?
Ian Mackay. Hold tight for hour 2. October 2, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
What you wanted. The roof is leaking, the foundation shaking, the windows are rattling, and then the paint is flaking. I'd pack up and leave, but something tells me to stay. Pretty girl next door is singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in Alabama singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in Carolina singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts way down in Georgia singing that doo-da-day. The clock is ticking and the bills unpaid. Company's coming and the beds unmade. I'm looking for someone who'd be willing to pay me lots of money for singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in California singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in Oklahoma singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in West Virginia singing that doo-da-day. There's a gun on the table. Guess I'll put it to my head. Maybe I'm just going to watch a little TV instead. Come join me tonight. Some maison flambé. We'll burn down the kitchen singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in Tanzania singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in Argentina singing that doo-da-day. All the ghosts in North Korea singing that doo-da-day. A doo-da-day.
Watford Pizzo Show. Started the second hour off with Hart Explained from Kariki. Sam Bennett, Doodah Day. Bold Are the Tears, Samuel Locke Ward after that. Rat Boy, from brand new, from Chat Pile. That's the name of a band, Chat Pile.
Chat Pile, wow.
Chat, C-H-A-T.
Chat Pile?
Yeah, Chat Pile. Wow. And then Button on a Fur Coat from Bullets or Balloons. The Flying Vipers with Mash Tun Babylon. And finally, Too Many Husbands, Kariki. By the way, is Lyle a lawyer?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for answering.
Yeah, but he's an independent lawyer. He just works freelance stuff.
He ain't searching to get all predatory on Odds Bands Name Stealers.
Oh no.
Okay.
That's not his style. No,
no, I know.
No, and to be fair, I don't know the people who have the name in the odd. I just wanted a name that wasn't going to cause. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't have a lawyer.
Absolutely.
I'm not getting a lawyer, and I just don't want to deal with any of that stuff. And so the thing about the Kariki, the real test of the name Kariki that was so great was that when you punch it into a keyboard on an internet search, you get zero results. And that's what I'm about. That's what I'm talking about. You know, I love that. You know, it just that it doesn't have you're not freighted with all this other crap that's out there, you know. I'm trying to think. There was some. Oh, you know, our son, when in I think third grade or something. This is an aside. In third grade, at his school, he goes to DCPS Elementary School called Hurst, and he did. Now he's in seventh grade, but at the time, the kids would pick names like for their. Teams, you know, like they have names for each class each classroom. So they were given a list of like two sets of words, and they could create these names. And I think one of the things I forgot it exactly. I think it was spicy tacos or something like that. And somebody was like, "Oh, you know, that's a funny name. We're calling ourselves the spicy tacos." And then somebody decided just double check that against the old internet. And the results for that were really, really inappropriate. And so we let the teacher know. I took him aside and I said, just want you to know that you might want to think twice about this, because if the kids happen to enter into a search engine the name of their class team, they're going to be a little bit puzzled and or upset. And then they actually looked it up and they were appalled. So they appreciate that. Anyway, that's the internet for you. You know, that you can almost, you know, it doesn't take long before you find something that doesn't taste good. And I think with this, it just was so nice because there was no hits. The other thing about the name is I love this about this, about the name Kariki, is that nobody knows or agrees on how to spell it. And I went back to the source, to the person who taught me the game, and I said, how do you spell it? How is it spelled? And he goes, I have no fucking idea. He has no idea. So nobody knows. So I love that. It's just a sound. I mean, actually, until fairly recent times in the English language, it really didn't matter how things were spelled. What mattered was whether or not you could communicate with the sound. You know, if you, through spelling it out, whatever word letters you used, that's why you would see shoppy with two P's, and, you know, it could be shop with S-H-O-P or S-H-O-P-P-E.
Shop.
Or, you know, right, there's a million, like, those, all that weird, those spellings, that was common, because really it was just a matter of, does it do the job? Does it communicate what it is? And I was reading a really interesting article that talked about that the only area, really, and this may be changing now with the way texting all that is affecting English language, but for years, the only manifestation of that practice was really in the way people spelled names. So you might see Jennifer could be spelled, like, you know, 10 different ways.
Sure.
Like, I'm Jennifer, J-I-N-E-R. E-R, you know, like, you know, Jenna, you know, there's just so many weird different versions of how people spell their names.
And versus how they speak, right? We say phonetic. But remember, we're especially the European thing, you're getting everybody to use this one Roman alphabet to do all the sounds.
Right,
okay.
Right.
That's asking a lot. But what about this idea of a name conjuring an image? For example, we played with this band up in the city called Uncle Bob Touch Me.
That's nice. Actually, you know, Brendan's son, Leo, he and his friends had a band called Your Mother and I Are Getting Separated. That, I think, is one of the greatest band names I've ever heard.
I want to play Last Thing.
Radio Študent predstavlja
Klubski maraton 20!
Klinci, brzojezična junaška rap godba iz Metlike.
Lele, svetski garažni trio iz radija Kile Kilometrov.
Spiral Minds, elektrobendovski prosti pad z obale.
Brma, štajerski kantautorski strup v sredinskih flaškah.
Kavasutra, goriški džezerski prelet v kratki formaciji.
In Billy Clubs, preurit hardkorovski koktejl iz Trsta.
Stoletošnja najglasnejša glasbena karavana po domači grudi, ki še 20-tič kroži po slovenskem klubovju in mestih.
Šesterica izbranih bendov preskakuje javno zdravstvene in finančne ovire ter se podaja na jubilejno koncertno turnejo po vsej državi.
MC Pekarna Maribor,
Train Station Subart Kranj,
Smak Cirkno,
Mik Murska Sobota,
Galerija Simulaker Novo Mesto,
Metlika,
Studio Hendrix Radija Koper,
MKNŽ Ilirska Bistrica,
Carinarnica Nova Gorica,
Skrita lokacija Ankaran,
Ptuj
in veliki finale v Ljubljani.
Klubski maraton, najzanesljivejša turneja po domači grudi.
Več na Radio Student Pikasi pošivnica Klubski maraton.
svetlo. Semper fi. Uva. Klasične dobrične i klasične.
Ja nigde baš da bi vodo za spustje manje.
To me šeptira stari, to me opira stari. Kira dobi sedna bistera da me ti spira stari. Da me ti spira stari.
Smakam pipu da uva.
Cijeli life, da se dao bi cijeli life. Wow, wow, cijeli sajt. Isto dao sam nimi žao. Ti mili kaj, e pa te ga blobi baš. Ne sam kada baš, ne sam kužiš buraz. Da se ja gdem sa ej. Malo se gremi za ego, malo ne znam kje bi delo. Pravi škrat ti izvitero, nisam vidu kad sam gledao. Kad sam prazno me streljam. Buraz ti da nisam zginu. Riješ me dolgo nisam vidu. Snimam album ti boš vidu. Znaš da malo bega spinfo. Svaka sekunda je bitna. Teče maraton sprintom. Svaki sad vaga se igra. Svaki sad vaga se igra. Predolgo smo bili pravilom te palimo. Teka u blinka, to ti odrikam klinč. Na kitar skineš ko me vidiš. Nama nikdo gdje se vidi.
Sajdama me, na noći sajdama me. Nomo već ovo čakam ovu vrsti stajan. Dak ne boš tvoj kaj. Na mjestu smo na sranje. Zamenjamo za pare na stređu. Gorka stvaram to teško. Za cigara razvijemo. Da zaista kipiju bi naš.
Garantiram ti da moja cijela klika skoče iz ovinka koza guste i tak isa spika bura skusna slika bura skajpa. Sam malo izredan pa kajpom. Zavrtim si sebe na ajpa. Zavrtim si život za isto ekipom. On svak dan u prizo.
Puna stanovanja grbi.
Imam strah, sa spona se kesmo bilani za čas. Naredili smo plan, opekali dnar. Ej, zaprli se sam, štakali hard. Ej, čakali dan, spaljeni hard. Ej, al drugi dan, sve tični san. To je life, kako so misliš fan. Svi odrasli smo na istom tam. Eni ostali na istom stoj. Eni bi radili viši sloj. Moram sanjati da si visi boj. Zato moram već u krizi boj. Boj. I nigde nisam na veličin boj, al ne. I nigde mi mi treba dva kapisa za me. Preve smo lažni i ženi za skreve. Korel za zada i spade ti krepe. Sad će ti prskati, dolgo smo čakali samo do eno noć.
Zajdama me, do noći, zajdama me. Do noć, ovo čakam, ovo vršti stajam. Tak ne boš tvoj kajan. Na mjestu smo da stanje zamenjamo. Za pare na stređu, gorka stvaram ko teško bo. Za cigara da prijemo, da caj tak i bil bi naš.
Pa jesmo še izmiri. Tak dan pjan, tak dan sam pijan, tak dan sam pijan. Tak dan pjan, tak dan sam pijan, tak dan sam pijan. Tak dan pjan, tak dan sam pijan, tak dan sam pijan. Tak dan pjan, tak dan sam pijan, tak dan sam pijan.
so much damage. Damage into lessen the damage.
Damage some more.
Always mixing Molotov. Solitude.
Trying to fix a score.
Bob for Pedro show. That was last thing from Kariki, KM20. There's a bunch of stuff from Slovenia, a Ljubljana club there called Maraton put out a comp. So Popnika from KM20, Billy Clubs with Hitler's Dead. I don't know how to pronounce this. 3:RMA with Running in Blue. Leili with Zvan Zebi. Klinci with Ino Noč. Globiano Segravaniana from Kavasutra, Push It from Spiral Mind, and finally, Have a Cup of Tea from Kariki.
Have a cup of tea. Yeah, that's a good sandwich right there. Kariki on top and bottom.
But a song come in Arlington, Virginia called Have a Cup of Tea.
Yup.
It reminded me, you know, me and D. Boone's favorite Who record was Sellout, and there's little spiels in between the tunes, right? What's for tea, doctor? And that's what I thought of when I saw that title. But when I heard the song, you know, I don't think you can copyright a title.
No. No, you can't. You can't. Words are not. You can't copyright words, Roy. You can copyright logos.
Yeah.
But you can't. You have to have a deviated spelling or something. I mean, that's the only way. I mean, Discord kind of like it's a unique mark that we. But we don't have it copyrighted, but anyway, or so I maybe we do. I don't know if we do anymore, but we ever did. But at any point, it's like, but like a word like Apple, there's Apple Records and Apple Computers. The question is, what is the product? And that's why the Apple, you know, when Apple started doing iTunes, that's when the Apple Records were like, oh, well, hold on a second. Like, we're okay with the computer bit, but now you're getting into music.
Right.
And that started a long, long, long
sure.
Lawyer thing, you know. The lawyers are always making the money here, I think.
You know what I thought? Well, it'd either be that or people shooting each other. Well, they still are shooting each other. What is the process that goes into writing a Kariki song?
Usually, I will come up with something like a riff on my, I have like a beat or a guitar, like a semi-acoustic, it's an Italian guitar called a JG. I don't know, it's like a toy guitar practically, but I just sit around strumming on it and I'll find something and I'll start pulling on that thread and seeing it just, I'll find a riff and then I'll bring it into the basement with Joe and Amy and then we just start playing. It's just play. We just play it forever. Like there's a song on the record called Sheila Bop. We must have played that for 5 years before we finished it. We kept just, I have literally like dozens if not hundreds of versions of that, just us working through it, trying to understand it, try to get to the bottom of it. And then once the song starts to take a shape musically, then words are applied, which is really, it's hard. I always know the melody. Like I know a song I'm going to sing, I know the melody. And I even know what the song is about, but I literally cannot put it into words yet. So it's like I know that these songs are about and they're sort of prenatal or whatever. What do you call it? Like they're sort of, what do you call it when you're still in gestation?
In the womb.
Like
you're still, you're in the womb.
Yeah, you're still in the womb. Like I know what these songs are about. Then the thing I realized that for me at least, like what comes naturally to me is just the riffs and the music itself. And it's important to me. Like I'm not kidding around about it. So then when I write words, the words I have to write, they have to have the same, they have to be like, they're serious for me because I want them to reflect what the music is to me. And now they may not be exactly about the same thing. But there's a similar tonality. And that's one of the reasons it takes it so long to write. Like right now I'm sitting, like I keep writing riffs and we probably have, I don't know, 50. I have no idea how many pieces of music that we will just come, we'll go in the basement and just start kicking one around and see if we can get to wake up.
Well, you're psychic because fucking the next song I'm going to play is Sheila Bop. And you know, we're at the end of the second hour, October 2, 2020, Dish Wap Peter Show, special guest Ian McKay, time for hour three. October 2, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Thank you. losing what? What does it do? The people line up to be a cast of 1,000. Maybe the question is what's using who?
Sure. agree with you 100,000 strong. Standing out on the lawn. There's some people here to see you. I don't think they agree with you 100,000 strong. Standing out on the lawn. There's some people here to see you. I don't think they agree with you 100,000 strong. Standing out on the lawn.
For Peter show, start off the third hour, Kariki, Shadilabop, which have incredible, the lyrics are a point because you printed them on the jacket, you know, on that.
The lyrics are serious, sure.
Yeah.
I've thought about this for a long time because, like, when Fugazi, pretty much always the music came first, and then we wrote words. And then we had to – and I started to think, well, why do I struggle so much actually getting the words together? It's because I want to do well, obviously, but also because I want the lyrics to have a weight that is commensurate with the music, like the way the music makes me feel. Like I think I started to feel like I had a writer's block because I couldn't write lyrics. But the truth is, like, I didn't have a writer's block with music. That just came out of me. It was just that once I wanted to make it public, I had to put words on it. That's the point. If you could tinker around, let's say you're a chef and you really get something, you make food, and the process of making the food is really deep and important to you, and you create this food, but then you want to serve it, you got to plate it somehow, right? You got to put it out. If you have a cake, you got to put icing on it, and that's sort of the way I think about lyrics. Is it like I would be happy just playing any music, just playing my guitar sitting around for the rest of my life. I'd be happy to do that. But if I'm going to share it, then I want to put some words on it so it communicates on different levels. That's just me. I'm not saying that everyone should do that. I'm just saying that's how I work. And so I think with a lot of the songs, I know the melody. I just don't know the word. But eventually, I figure them out because I got to, because I want to play.
Thoughts on instrumental music?
I think it depends. Like it's tonal. So, for instance, if it's a great, like a dance thing, then that can be really compelling. Like they're a great instrumental dance band. And or if it's like a prog thing, sometimes when you sing it live, especially when you see or jazz, when you see that live, you feel that the crackle of the energy between the musicians, and that is really profound. And sometimes with jazz, I have to say, sometimes the singing actually, because I think a lot of times with jazz, the words are structured almost more like an instrument than they are. They're not as spiritual to me somehow. They seem more like they fit the structure, but the. They sometimes are distracting for me from the instrumental aspect of it. But with punk rock, it was always about the words to some degree. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of purely instrumental bands. It depends. So, I mean, it really depends on – some bands have been pretty incredible. But then you see them a few times and you're like, okay, well, I've seen them. Like, I don't know. But I've seen the bands who I'd love to are – you have like a singer or singers who have like a charisma, then I always want to see them every time. Right. Because you never know what's going to happen next.
Right. So I guess the short answer, it depends. We had Crane after that with Our Tears of Joy, Bronze Age UFO.
Which Crane?
He's the guy who played trumpet in the Minuteman, like Project Merge.
Uh huh.
He lives in Idaho now.
I love that record, by the way.
Oh, man. It's not as bad as Three-Way Tie, but kind of embarrassed a little bit.
I don't know. I don't agree. I mean, I know
the Steppenwolf cover, especially.
I was really touched. I think the cover of that record is one of the greatest.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a D. Boone painting.
Yeah, it's a beautiful painting.
Yeah.
Where is that thing?
I think Brother Matt has it here in Pedro. Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore after that with Alan Butte said this part D in the Inauguration Day. Ricky.
Playing the whole record here. We're good.
Yeah, because I love it, man. This is a badass record. In fact, I want to play this title scared me. Clean Kill.
Thank you.
Juan from Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Clean Gill from Kariki off air. People, Ian enlightened me to this stuff. And I had the right feeling about it, but he articulated to me. It's a very heavy tune. Heaven Channel Season 2, LP4 from Galaxy. They did 18 albums so far during this Quentin Quarantino mode, people. So don't sit on your hands. There's stuff. King Lear was written during a lockdown 400 years ago. Kariki, final music. Woulda, coulda. In Pedro here, we say woulda, shoulda, coulda. But
I think that's what it was originally called, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Okay. You know, you. It was like I was in that sailboat and you caught me with the wind. It just filled my sails with that. I mean, the whole record, you know, I'm partial to trios anyway. There's more room in the boat. But there's also the interplay, the dialogue that you got going with Amy and Joe.
Right.
Fucking bitching.
Thanks, man.
Really?
And I would say to you, that's exactly what I was saying earlier about, like, Amy and I played together for so long, and having Joe coming into it, it was just suddenly the conversation just changed. That's what it is with music, though. It's always relationships and conversations. And you know, and we all have, like, we have this sort of, it's just so nice. And, like, and, you know, we've been practicing straight through all this mess. We've been, you know, through the lot, we practice 3 days a week, still. Just practice. We practice, you know, and then we get, Yesterday I was working, scrubbing in an oven at this, trying to clean up this apartment for a friend of ours who's moving in, and I was just doing all this work, and I was listening to just practice tapes, and thinking like, all right, I think these ideas are working. Like I'm studying all the time, just working on it.
You mean and you're talking about round two of Kariki?
There'll be another one? I hope so. Oh yeah, we have so many pieces of music. We're trying to get it together. Never stop playing.
Yeah, that's a great philosophy. But, how long did it take to record this record?
Well, we were a little bit hamstrung by the, there were just logistic issues because we had a kid in school, elementary school at the time, I think, or maybe it was middle school. But anyway, so we could only do it in the early part of the day before someone would have to go get him from school. But I would say, it took us a while, like, you know, maybe, I can't remember, maybe 10 days of sort of tracking. And then we just took us forever to finish it because we couldn't get it. Joe went away for a bunch of time, and then he had to come back from tour, and then we'd go in and knock out a couple things. And so over a month and a half total of just time frame, but then in total days, I don't know, 2 weeks, 14 days, I don't know, actually. It's hard to add it up because I don't remember.
I was just curious because the shit is tight.
Well, Don Zintera, who runs Inner Ear Studios, who I've worked with now, I mean, actually, in August, it was 40 years of working with Don.
Yeah.
And he's a superhero. You ever meet him?
I don't think so.
Well, next time you come out, we got to go, you would love this guy. And he's just, so he really stepped up on this recording. It's his studio. Like I said, I've worked with him since, I first started working with him when I was in the Teen Idols.
Yeah.
He had built the desk, the mixing desk, and he had a four track, and he was just starting. And now it's like, you know, it's a full on studio, but he still has that completely eccentric feel to him. He's never kowtowed to like the commercial market at all. He just loves making recordings with people. And that process, it was such a nice time, and he did such a good job recording this time. He has a really deep understanding of sound, one that I don't have. But, you know,
that's okay. We can't be on bass either. I'm curious, is your son into music? Does he play?
It's funny, when he was little, he really wanted to play trumpet, which was interesting since I don't play trumpet and Amy didn't play trumpet, but I had a trumpet sitting around the house, and he started playing by himself. And then he, so we got, actually Mark Cisneros, the aforementioned Mark Cisneros, sure, came over and started teaching him trumpet, because Mark can play anything. And then he wanted to play piano for a little while, and he practiced that, he learned a little bit of piano, and then he said, okay, I'm not playing any more music. But, he listens to music all the time, very weird music. I don't know, it was like newer stuff that's not commercial, it's all very weird, kind of jokey hip hop weird and I don't know, weird instrumental thing. I can't quite figure it out what his what he's cooking with. But and every once in a while he'll pull out something. I hear him sing him to himself, and I think, well, he's really there's something going on over there. But and also I have to say when Amy was pregnant with him, she practices drums every day, period end. So the whole time she was pregnant, she practiced with him in the belly.
Yeah.
And then when he was born, she would practice when he napped in a sack hanging off of her. So he may not play drums, but they're in there.
Yeah, and if you can do drums, you can do anything musical. I was just curious. It's been a big honor to have you on the show, Ian, truly.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When Karate 2 comes around, or any of your prods, you got like maybe fucking Egg Hunt Part 2.
I don't see that happening. That was a moment. You know why it's called Egg Hunt, by the way?
No idea. But I always wondered.
It was recorded on Easter.
Okay.
That's it. That was it. Did you actually have to call it Egg Hunt?
That's beautiful.
Okay.
I love you so much, Ian. People, it's been the October 2, 2020 edition of Wapito Show. Keep your powder dry.